Check your boobs, the choice is up to you. So go ahead, give it a whirl. No more trouble and strife, it just might save your life. Check those boobs, girls.
It's the Mother and Daughter Breast of Friends podcast. How are you? How you been? What you been up to? Anything exciting to tell me? Been celebrating Breast Cancer Awareness Month? I think we all have, haven't we? It is amazing, you know. Don't matter how much I have lived in this world since before I can even remember. The things that I'm learning still, the insights that are coming out is just incredible. And it feels like a bit of a beautiful place to be in, even if it is a little bit of a scary place. And I genuinely feel like now I'm taking in even more knowledge than I've ever had before. But I really feel like I'm getting into a position that I can help, if that makes sense. Because sometimes it's all right, isn't it? You know, kind of knowing these things and having, you know, the knowledge is power kind of stuff. But it isn't if you don't know what to do with it, or if you feel lost, or if you feel like, oh, I should be doing something, but I'm not. But I tell you what, how many times have I said this? We're more powerful together. And this collaboration of people over this last year, because it's been a year now, it's officially been a year. Gosh, that's made me a bit emotional, that, since me and Mum started this podcast. And what started off as bit of fun, you know, memories to be made with Mum. Let's be able to sort of retell the story. Let's tell people that we're here if you want us. Has literally become quite vital to a lot of people. Even the medical profession have said, you know, it is down to things like this podcast. And of course, what a lot of you are doing yourselves as well, to actually be the voice. They're brilliant. You know, the medical profession are amazing. And the things, again, that I've sort of been able to reflect on of how far we've come since, you know, Mum's operation 31 years ago and there being no knowledge to literally where we are today is incredible. And then to talk to Julian not so long ago, Professor Barwell, about, right, well, we're looking at bespoke medicine and, you know, hopefully one day there might be like a retreat for people with faulty genes. You think, oh my goodness me, this is incredible. But we still need to be that voice, because the medical profession, they know that side of it, but we're the ones that live with it. You know, we're the ones that see our loved ones going through things. We are the ones that deal with, well, what does that mean for us? How is that affecting my family? How is that affecting my mental health as well? And that is a big thing that we've been kind of reflecting on over this last sort of wave of episodes. And we really did, you know, it's not a case of, we're not going to think about the women. Of course we do. That's what we always do. But it became very, very clear to me. And I think it always has. It just took me a while to say it. And that is, what about the men? What about the blokes? What about the men that are left with no partners, navigating parenthood? What about the men that have passed it on to their children? And the first time that they ever find out that they've got this gene is when their daughter is dying. What do we do to help them, to support them? You know, the husbands, the brothers. And that is what we've sort of been looking into quite a lot. And I've been very, very lucky. You know, we've spoken to Phil as well, who is a male breast cancer survivor. You don't get many of them to talk to. And we do know that it's rare, but we also know that it happens. We also know, you know, we've talked about sort of statistics on what it means to men who carry a gene, you know, higher risk of prostate cancer. Higher risk of breast cancer in some instances, higher risk of other cancers in other instances. But the major, major thing is passing this gene down. And if you have listened, or if you haven't listened, please do, because it's a bonkers, it's a mad story. In fact, I want to bring my guest in. Laura, Something happened to us recently. This is Laura from Grace and Solicitors, by the way, ladies and gentlemen. Hello, darling.
Hello,
Mum. It's nice to bring you out to a restaurant in the beautiful Grappa here in the middle of Sheffield City Centre. I'm going to come on to why you're here with us again, but we just wanted to have a bit of a chill and a relax and a bit of a chinwag, really. But yeah, we found family, right? Weirdly. Now, can you bear with this?
Go on.
Right, I'm going to try and keep it as simple as possible, but even I was like, whoa. When you have a faulty gene, right, your gene fault is bespoke to your family, right? So if you have the same fault within the gene as somebody else, the likelihood is that you're related, okay? Whenever a faulty gene is found, it's registered, and that's across the entire world. Right? Our gene fault has never appeared anywhere else, ever, apart from recently, when it appeared in Michigan. Right? Oh no, this gets even more weird, this does. So we're like, right, okay, obviously it was like, ooh, we've obviously got family over there. We can't have access to who these people are because of, you know, rights and all of that kind of stuff. But what we did do is some genealogy along with a company to find, well, how on earth could it have got there? And we discovered it. It's a great, 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 great uncle of mine and a granddad of one of my cousins, et cetera, et cetera. A guy called Thomas Land went out to Canada in the early 1900s, right? And he went over with his family to Canada. And he is the guy that is responsible for passing this gene on. Now, bear with this, right? The family that we've managed to contact, who we know is a relative of this Tom Land, right? I know it's complicated, isn't it? Isn't the family that have registered the gene.
Oh.
So there's another family that is across the border. So Michigan is across the border from Canada. So all we kind of know is that he's played about a little bit. So, let me have some water because, again, it just gets weirder. So we managed to trace the family that's the legitimate family. Mm-hmm. So bear in mind, we're coming up, I don't know how many generations, right? And it's been men, 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 men. The lady that we managed to get in touch with, who is now our cousin Kim, her mum had breast cancer, right? But she couldn't get tested. Kim couldn't get tested because she didn't have any family until we appeared and went, here's the link. And now she's gone and got tested because she can, because of all the evidence of us. Guess what? Carries the gene. How mad is that? Just a little bit weirder, right? Kim, when mum was having her operation, my mum, Kim, all the way in Canada, was studying genetics, cancer genetics at university.
Wow.
What is that? This is 30 years ago, none of them knowing about each other, no one knowing about a genetic fault. Yet she's studying genetics because she thought it might be something. And on the other side of the world, my mum's having an operation and becoming the first. Weird, isn't it?
Yeah, it is weird. But isn't that amazing, though? Just
I know
how technology and all this has come on, that you can find somebody at the other end of the world.
We had it. She came over. Kim came over with her family and came and stayed, and she met her closest cousin, Vanessa. So they all share the same granddad.
Mm-hmm.
And they were bringing photos out and then seeing out the tree. And there was, I just had this beautiful image of seven women all sat in front of me, my auntie Di, my mum, my cousin Helen, who's been with us since the beginning, Vanessa, who my mum found in the first. It was just wonderful. But I just find it all so bizarre. But the big, big thing that we took from that is that that must have gone down five generations of men before it showed itself.
Yeah.
Do you see what I mean? And that's why we need to bang this drum so, so hard. Because people still don't realise, they think breast cancer gene, well, men can't get it.
And just from my point of view, do they test men for this gene?
Yep.
So they could find out.
Mm-hmm. So basically, men get tested, but unfortunately for men, like in this instance, unfortunately or fortunately, I suppose, their risk isn't that high. They do have a bit of a higher risk of prostate cancer. And I think it's with BRCA2, they have a higher risk more of breast cancer. So usually if you've got a breast cancer in the family in men, that would be automatically for testing. Prostate and ovarian and breast cancer in a family is, you know, it's your right to be able to go and get tested. But a lot of the time men get prostate cancer at a later age anyway and don't think anything of it. So this is what I mean. It doesn't usually show itself until the child has got it. And that is really heartbreaking. And we've had this in a couple of instances, only in the last couple of years, really, of just guys being devastated. And it's not their fault, you know. How are you ever going to know, you know? And I just want to flag all of this, to say, look, we're here. And we did a beautiful podcast with a guy, Mike McCarthy. And I think, have you met Mike?
Yeah,
Mike's a bit of a local legend around the Sheffield Midlands parts, but also he was a Sky News presenter. He worked on the BBC as an anchor for many, 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 many years. And I think a lot of people said, oh, how come you're bringing like Mike on to the podcast? Well, Mike unfortunately lost his son a couple of years ago to suicide. And Mike runs a charity called Baton of Hope. And that's his way of, you know, again, Mike was sort of saying, I have worked on the front line. I have been in the middle of COVID. I have been in the middle of, you know, all sorts of horrific things. But the biggest killer is you. And it's sat right here. And statistically, the biggest killer in women under 50 is breast cancer. And the biggest killer in men is suicide. But it's the mental health implications that are sort of quite soul-destroying for a lot of people. And I've watched it recently, and this is what I sort of want to, you know, really touch on with you and just let's get this point over so much, is that when young women die, and they are young, and it does, you know, that it is usually sort of 30s, I'm not saying usually, but very often, 30s, 40s, when they've got babies, maybe they're on the second relationship, and then families split, and people are left there going, well, I don't know what my rights are, and I don't know, am I allowed to see these children again? Yeah. They might have lived with me since they were little, but I'm not actually their biological father. What does that mean? But at the time of their partner or their wife going through the illness, how do you talk about something like that?
It's one of those really difficult things, isn't it? Because you don't want to discuss the inevitable, or hopefully not the inevitable, but but these are all questions that I would say, to be fair, if you have a cancer diagnosis, you've perhaps got a little bit of luxury over somebody that walks outside and gets hit by a bus, because you have got that opportunity to have those conversations. And as much as you don't want to, you should, because it is, like you say, the people that are left behind, your children, your partner. If you've got blended families, how are you going to work out those complexities? And if everybody knows what the situation is beforehand, then if it doesn't come to pass, great.
Fine, yeah.
But if it does, at least you as well have got that peace of mind that you've put as much in place as possible to ensure that everyone can navigate this time that's always going to be so detrimental to your mental health in the first place without those extra complexities.
And I think, like you say, it's sort of, it's right in saying in that a lot of, I watch it, the guys especially, they don't even mention the thought of it, you know, and they will bury their head in the sand and I'll worry about that when it happens. The women, don't ever want to acknowledge, you know, they're fighting till their dying day. But I think what we're trying to get at here, and as we spoke about before, is that no matter what happens, and this is where we're going to get to, because you're going to absolutely thrape me, you need to have these affairs in order. And it kind of brings me now just to sort of say, you know, why you're here with me. And again, if you've not listened to previous episodes, why not? Now, I'll forgive you. But the wonderful Grace and solicitors from Sheffield and Derbyshire did sponsor us in the first instance, to which we were really, really sort of grateful for. But then all of a sudden, we started talking about different things and looking at different angles, and we went, actually, in the book of being all-encompassing and wanting to make sure everybody's okay, we've touched on so many different things that is massively important, haven't we?
We have.
You know, whether it's wills, whether it's clinical negligence, whether it's, you know, sort of family law, etc. So again, you know, thank you as a firm for being behind us and being...
It's been a pleasure.
Really. Being so supportive with everything. And I know you're going to be talking to our professors in depth about different things, and you're staying with us.
We are, yes.
But wills. When we say wills and affairs... What do we mean?
I think a lot of people, the amount of times I will get people that will turn around to me and say, I don't need a will because I don't have anything.
Mm.
Well, we've just talked about the fact, yes, you do. You have a relationship, potentially. You have children. You have family. You have pets. You have items that are sentimental to you that you probably have some thoughts about what you would like to happen. You might. It might just be your funeral instructions. You might want everyone to go and have a massive party, and you know, and you all these things we can put in, either into the will or
Even your funeral plans.
Yep, funeral wishes we put into the will. Although I would say, always make sure that the people who are organising the funeral know about
what you
because there's that slight risk that the will will get read after the funeral. So we don't want to go down that way. But yeah, we do put funeral wishes into the wills as well.
When you're doing a will, right, and I'm going to say something that's probably going to really irritate you, or probably something that you've heard before. Whenever I see readings of wills, it's always in some kind of film. Right, where the whole family are sat round and they're waiting to see what Uncle Jeffrey's left them, if it's left them the millions, etc., etc. Is it like that?
No.
No?
No, we do still get people who occasionally call us and say we need to do the will reading, and actually we can only disclose what the contents of that will are, either to the person that's written it, obviously, but if they're no longer with us, then to the people they've named as the executors of the will. Mm-hmm. Unless those executors are happy for other people to be involved.
Because let's be honest, none of us like talking about it, and we all like to think we're invincible, but unfortunately, everybody does die. You know, it is the rotation of life. I like to believe that we are reborn in different ways, or we leave legacies. But either way, it is something that is inevitable. I'm exactly like what you just said. I was like, oh, I don't really have hope. Do you know what I mean? But I do, of course, I have the two most precious commodities in my whole entire life, which are my children. And we've actually had some messages in, because I did put this on to our social media, you know, that I was coming to see you today. And if anybody did have any questions, and thank you for sending these in. And if we don't read yours out today, please don't worry. We've decided that we need to do more of this, and I'm going to get my backside into gear. But this partner thing and where children go, and again, I know we talked with Brady in one of the first episodes, it's almost a bit cut and shut in a way, isn't it? Children will go to their dad in most instances,
but it's whoever's got parental responsibility. So the person with the parental responsibility can appoint the guardians. So depending what's happened when you've separated, and indeed what's happened when the child has been born, then it's not necessarily the case that the father has the parental responsibility. And if it sits with the mother, and as we've said, in the majority of cases, it will be the mother that's passed away, then it may be that she can appoint her new partner as the guardian.
Right.
But again, this is why it's so important to ensure mm-hmm. that you know exactly where you stand and where those relationships stand, mm-hmm. because the last thing you really want is to then uproot a child out of their home if that's not going to be the best thing for them, just because dad's come back on the scene and decided, oh, well, hang on a minute, you're not around anymore, this is my child.
Mm. And these, I've seen it. Mm-hmm. I've seen it a couple of times this year. It broke my heart. Couple, and, you know, so not mentioning any names, but a couple who were married, been together for some time. He'd been in the children's life since they were like 18 months and 3 years old. They saw their dad, but not on a regular because he lives far away. Unfortunately, the mum, she did pass away, and she passed away quite quickly. And stepdaddy, nothing.
Yeah. Suddenly out the scene completely, yeah.
Oh, great break. That kills me, that does.
Yeah, and it's, you know, as I say, making sure that all of those rights are in place. Ideally, that everyone's talked to each other and have come up with a plan and a way of continuing the relationship, even if it changes so that they spend more time with their biological father. Absolutely. But I'd say I always feel, as a parent, I think that if your children have already lost one of the most important people in their lives, don't then take away another one.
This is what gets me, and then this is why, again, I was sort of like thinking we need to do something here, because I looked at this chap and he didn't dare say anything because he was, well, I can't say anything because I'm not dead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So who am I to say anything when these two children, you know, it needs to be there? But I'm thinking to myself, yeah, but you've just lost everything.
Yeah.
Everything.
And again, it's not what you want to do and it's not what you want to face up to, but honestly, making a will, looking at powers of attorney, looking at your guardian arrangements and everything else, you know, it's not as scary as it sounds. We're not frightening people. We're here to try and help guide people through that, not to... you know, it's not like you see on the telly of the stuffy old lawyer stuck in there and their little home just trying to, you know, take as much money as possible from you. It isn't that. We genuinely want to make sure that everything is as clean as possible so that people can navigate this trauma when it's going on in their lives.
And it goes as well. I mean, I mentioned children a lot, but a lot of people have pets that are their children. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned this to me before. It's like, well, you know, we've had this scenario of who gets the dog or who, you know, where's your cat going to go? Who's going to look after your cat? And these are things that worry people. And we know worry doesn't make you better.
It doesn't.
It really doesn't. So even things like that need addressing, don't they?
Completely. And with a pet, it's not just a case of, you know, saying who's going to have it, but also... You know, do you want to give some financial incentive to somebody to have it? Do you want to put some money aside to continue to look after it, particularly if it's, say, a horse, for example? You know, that's a large financial commitment to give to somebody else. Your moggy, perhaps a little less so, but you never know. But there's those considerations as well, because, again, you don't necessarily want to put a burden on somebody else when they're doing you a kindness, because they will probably feel obligated if you've put it in your will.
What happens with the scenario? So I'm going to come to a message that I've got, actually, that got sent in, because this might actually answer it. I'm going to read this. There was no name on it, but, that doesn't matter at all. This message came in saying, my wife is seriously ill with breast cancer. She's 39 and we have two children that are hers from a previous relationship. The children have a relationship with their dad, but he lives quite far away. This is very similar to what I was telling you about. I've been in their life since they were kids. We are still determined that Charlotte will beat this, and I don't want to have the conversation, but I'm so scared of losing her and the children. But unfortunately, these aren't the conversations that I can really have with Charlotte at the moment, because she's in and out. When someone gets so poorly, What happens then?
It's a very tricky one. I mean, the longer you leave it, the worse it's going to get. I mean, for us, if people are very poorly and they have got a fluctuating ability to be able to provide instructions about what they want, what we will tend to do is go and visit them either at different times, just to check that the instructions are continuous.
Right.
Most people, unless they have actually lost capacity, will, even when in the end stages of cancer treatment, will probably still be able to tell you what they want as far as their children are concerned.
Yep.
I might not be able to do something from a will point of view if they haven't got sufficient capacity, but at least it's an ability to talk to somebody else about your wishes, and that might influence what decisions are made at a later date.
Right, okay. So sort of legally, someone can't sort of say, well, they weren't of sane mind.
It's a tricky one, because I say, obviously, if somebody doesn't have capacity, they can't make a will, they can't make a power of attorney, they can't make any legal decisions like that. But we try and encompass other things. So we have what we call the memory box, which isn't a legal document. It's just somewhere for people to put down their notes and their instructions for people after they die. We do it to run alongside your will, because there's things you might not be able to have in your will that you want to tell people.
Okay.
But in that circumstance, I would suggest.
As in, like, secrets?
Yeah.
Well, I would have never have thought of that. I'm racking my brains now and thinking of what
well,
could...
it could be secret. Well, passwords is one.
Well, yeah.
No.
But do you know
don't
what?
Don't necessarily want to hand those out before.
Do you know what the... I mean... we're sort of laughing, and it is, and I know Ash won't mind me saying this at all, and he won't. Ash is, I feel like if one positive has come out, you know, massively from this last year, and you were there as well, Laura, because again, you supported us, was the family day that we did at Yorkshire Wildlife Park. Now, it was sort of a bit of yes, I want to do this kind of thing. It is going to get bigger and better each year, we determined. Yorkshire Wildlife Park said we can. The reason that idea came in the first place was because of Ash, right? Ash, it was beautiful.
Yeah.
It was just about bringing families together that had lost, you know, parents. Bring those children together, and allowing them to just be free, but talk if they want to. And same with the dads, or same with anybody that was sort of going through stuff. But Ash was a scenario where Tarina. She was fighting until her last day, and no one wanted to ever believe she was 31, you know. Mm-hmm. And she'd got Alfie, who was Ash's stepson, and she'd got Willow, who was Ash's actual daughter. But obviously, Alfie has a relationship with his dad,
yeah.
Right? But up until this point, there had been, you know, Alfie saw his dad, but Ash and Alfie's dad hadn't spoken, you know, because it's just what... how it is, you know, if you don't have to, you don't have to, you know. But what I'm getting at here is, one, Ash had no idea how to get into his internet banking. And he was so lost with that he, bless him, and I know he won't mind me saying this, because we love you, Ash, you know that I said this to you from the beginning, you are not on your own at all. But he just said, I just realised how much I depended, even down to my internet banking. He says, I don't even know how much, you know, the bills are, because she did it. So things like that, and then obviously Alfie moving out to go and live with his dad hit him very, very hard. But on that day at Yorkshire Wildlife Park, oh God, oh dear. When they turned up, the two dads together, mm-hmm. with Alfie and Willow, nothing else would have mattered that day.
No, exactly. And that's the perfect scenario,
yeah,
though, isn't it?
It is the perfect
that's
scenario.
What you
but
want.
It doesn't always end like that.
No.
But let's, you know, we can only make these things happen if we talk.
Empowering your legal journey with Grayson Solicitors. Expertise you can trust. Proud sponsors of the Mother and Daughter Breast of Friends podcast.
Can I ask as well, you know, when you've done a will, So I was talking to Mike about this, and Mike was also sort of saying to me that you need to be conscious when you do change relationships, whether you've got kids or not, if you lived with somebody. Is that right? Because if you've made a will when you bought a house together,
yeah,
and then move on, but something happens, it's quite difficult to have access to their affairs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can be. And again, this is like where the powers of attorney come into play, and the wills themselves, but also, as in this day and age, so important to make sure that you've got the ability to be transparent about online banking, online affairs, anything like that.
Have your memory box.
Have your memory box. Even silly things like Facebook. So on Facebook, you can do a legatee on there.
I always wondered about this, you know.
Yeah, so Facebook own the rights to everything you put on there. But if you open up a legacy account, so if you die, you pass that on to somebody else. Now, I don't know about you, but for me, Facebook is basically my photo album.
So, oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's it.
That's the only, that's the biggest thing that would ever scare me, is losing all of those photos.
Mm-hmm.
Because we don't print them out like we used to, do we? Yeah. In fact, I'm going to go home and print them all out now.
Yeah.
But yeah.
You get it pop up once a year, and you know, like, oh, the memories, and you're like, oh, that's what happened. Particularly birthdays, but also like silly things where you got out with your friends or whatever, and you go, oh, that was a really good day, we should do that again. Yeah, so the legacy account on Facebook, something to do on there. And that's the case with so many different things in the digital world. We don't own them, we license them.
Wow.
So we need to work out a way to pass those on. Or if we can't, because you can't have all of them, to make sure that's preserved in a different way.
Yeah. It's so interesting, isn't it? Yeah, it's like I wouldn't, with my sort of Facebook accounts, I'd want my children to see that when they're older, because they've done some blooming brilliant things. And I know people slate social media or whatever, but I'm under the, I feel with it, yeah, it can be an arsehole, but only if you let it, you know, it can absolutely be marvellous. Mm-hmm. And it can be such an amazing tool. And like you say, a great memory box. And when time up comes on, I love looking at it. Yeah. and seeing the things that we've done. Is it easy to change your will?
Yeah.
When you've made your will, and say, right, okay, I made my will. Yeah, that's what I want, blah, 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 blah. But then 2 years later, I'm divorced. I'm somewhere else entirely. Need to change things. Do I need their permission? Do I need my partner's permission to change my will?
Your will
is only if you've made one together.
No, even then doesn't. There's a very specific type of will which you can only change if you both sign to it, but there would be very, very few and far between legal professionals that would do that type of will just because of the complexities. Mm. So a mirror will, which is probably what you're talking about there, where most people will do it with their partner, but your will is your document. So if you want to come away and change that separately, you can do. So you don't need anybody's permission. The beneficiaries don't need to know. The executors don't need
nothing.
To know. It's up to you. And it is really straightforward to change a will, as long as you've still got the capacity to do so, that's fine.
Right, okay. I'm just trying to see, you know, what I'm trying to get across here. And this is why I really wanted us to chat like this in sort of like a casual scenario. Mm. I don't know how you're going to feel about me saying this, but I know some people that are frightened of solicitors. Do you know what I mean? It's like I always had this fear of accountants, right? Mm-hmm. Until we met lovely First Intuition, who were sponsors of our last podcast, and I said they broke me down. But I think people do probably frightened they can't afford it, or frightened that they might get told off in some case, or that they're going to have to find a lot of time, or it's going to be complicated. It might cause issues. What would you say to people who do sort of have that kind of mindset? Because you're not scary, babe. You're not scary. You're all ever so lovely.
Yeah.
Even our Peter is ever so lovely.
He is. No, we're not. not scary at all. I mean, what I would say from a timescale point of view, we tend to put our initial meetings in for about an hour and a half. The reason we do that is because we go into quite a lot of detail about what people have just to make sure we're giving the correct advice.
Okay.
We don't charge for that. We just do it because we want to make sure that every single client is getting the correct advice. That's our number one priority. After that, you get your drafts, your wills, you approve everything. Once you're happy with it all, if you want another meeting because you're not sure about anything, fine. And then, but in the majority of cases, you'll have that initial meeting and then you'll come back in to sign it. And the signing appointment probably takes about half an hour. Once it's signed, it's done. And that's it.
You have to sign it in front of anybody. Yes. You do.
You do. Two witnesses.
Oh, like what? Like a wedding?
Yeah.
And do you choose them?
We tend to do it. So if we've drafted the will, we'll normally get people back in to sign them.
In front of you?
In front of me and then one, me and a colleague. For a couple of reasons. One, to make sure that they've got the witnesses and the witnesses know what they're doing and they're not family members because that's a bad idea and things. But also just so we can make sure it's signed correctly because, again, we don't want to find out it's not signed correctly after someone's passed away.
Right, well, yeah.
Can't do a lot about it, though. So normally we'd do it. But then once it's done, it's valid. And we tend to check in with our clients. We try and check in with them every couple of years.
Is that what you do? I think you mentioned that to me before, actually. It's not just a case of, right, that's it.
No.
We've done it. Because, again, like, it's sometimes not going to be the forefront of your mind.
No.
But actually just having that little check-in. How do you do that? Is it a call or is it an email?
Normally either a phone call or an email, depending what people's preference is. Just touching base. Has anything major changed in your life?
Done.
Do you need a conversation about updating your will or not? And that's it.
What if there was a scenario, right? Again, someone mentioned this to me, and I'm not going to drop anybody in it or anything like that. She knew that she was going to be the main beneficiary in her parents' will, but had recently split with her husband. The parents were worried that he would get half of everything that she was left in the will.
Yeah.
Is that... Just even though he's not named?
It can be. The inheritance can form part of a divorce settlement.
Wow.
We can do some things to try and protect against that, but it's never guaranteed. But it is always a good idea to take advice both from, I say us, from a will's point of view, but also the family team to work out exactly what might happen in that scenario. And that's one of the advantages we have, that we work very closely together for those type of appointments. You'd probably see one of our team and one of the family team, same with guardianship.
I think that's why my mum's never wanted me to be married, you know, Lord. that's all I can put it down to. I've done all right for it, though. She's done all right with it. But again, it is something we're thinking about, you know.
Absolutely.
It's all of these things don't seem to be forefront of your mind. You know, you're probably battling with, you know, what's happening in the house, what's happening with the kids, how you're negotiating this new life. But in the interim, something else might happen because it's life and it's what does. You need to sort of think about that and how that's going to be.
I think with small children as well, you're probably wanting to think you're going to end up leaving them some money. But what do you want them to do with that money?
Yeah.
What do you want their guardians or their parents to be able to do with that money? You know, if dad's still around, do you want him to be able to make the decisions to spend it all? Or do you want to put some away that it can be used for school? Do you want them to get it at 18? I mean, my daughter's 19. I wouldn't want her to get it at 18.
All things. This was another thing as well. This is from the past, and I remember someone mentioning it to me. Family, mum, no, sorry, it was dad, stepmom, and daughter were left an equal share in a house. The daughter was to sign over her share because it would have meant her mum would have been eligible for her inheritance, for her daughter's inheritance.
Under intestacy, yeah.
Does that work on both sides, mum and dad?
Yeah. So if you die without leaving a will, it will go, depending how much you leave, to your spouse, to your children. But then if you have no spouse or children, it's going up to your parents.
Right. So, right. So if something had happened to that child, her inheritance, so it was like her, a third of a house, that third of her house
would have gone to her mum.
Her mum would have been entitled. Wow. See, these are all things that really, and it's horrible, and I'm so, you know, I'm not sorry we're talking about it, because it needs to happen, and I think, I'm hoping that we're doing this in the best way possible.
Absolutely, but I think as well, like you said earlier, I mean, a lot of people, when they do die of breast cancer, they are relatively young.
Yeah.
And with the best will in the world, it's not, again, something you likely to necessarily want to talk about, but is your partner going to remarry? Probably.
Yeah.
Well, he's probably getting to another relationship.
Yeah.
If you've got your house with him, do you then want that to go to his new partner, or do you want to protect that for your child?
Oh, my goodness me. If you're not married, right? If you're not married, but you've got children together and a house, hopefully you'll have done a will, yeah? Okay. Because, again, if something happens to her, would her share go straight away to her parents if they weren't married?
If they're not married, yeah, the partner, and it's not gets in the will, under the intestacy provisions. The intestacy provisions in this country are quite antiquated. They occasionally update them, but not in any significant way as far as the beneficiaries are concerned. If it is an unmarried partner, they will get nothing, unless you're in a civil partnership.
And so it doesn't matter how long you've been together. Because I hear people say that, oh, well, we've been together for over 10
no
years.
No common law wife or nothing. Husband, that is not a thing. You can potentially make a claim under the Dependency Act, but obviously that's a cost.
And yeah.
Again, not necessarily what you want to be doing at that point in your life, having to then engage with solicitors to fight the estate to get what your duty.
Laura, I'm a bit worried now. Well, I'm not worried. I'm thinking. I owned a home at one point with my ex. We'll have done a will, won't we? I'm quite sure. I'm talking a long time ago. How would I... I don't know, you know. How would I find that out?
Well, again, unfortunately, in this country, really with great difficulty, because unless you've got a copy of it at home or you know where you made it, there's no central register. So we can't necessarily, we do various things to try and search for them, but it's not like on the continent, they have to be registered somewhere. Here, they do not. So the best thing to do in that scenario, Becky,
make
a new will.
Can we make a new one?
Yes.
Can we get on with that? Because I'm so sorry and I'm so cross with myself because, you know, it's always easy, isn't it, to sort of go, well, you need to do this and you need to be getting involved with that. And I think this is where, and I was saying this to my cousin and said it to a few people, it's why I feel so bloody privileged in a way, you know, that I've been able to make the choices that I've made. And you can go down one or either line, which is be totally paranoid, or be very carefree because you feel very liberated. And I think my I hate admin brain says, we're all right, it's going to be fine. But now the more I'm thinking about it, I mean, yes, I rent my property, but everything in it is mine.
Yep.
You know, what would happen to that? Because I think, well, hang on a minute. So the kids would probably go to their dad.
Yeah.
I would want to put in place that... And I'm quite sure he would do this, you know, that my parents have as much access to them as they always have had. My partner now, you know, where does that leave him? And all the belongings in their house, where would they go?
Well, they'd belong to your children, but from a practical point of view,
where
would they go?
So interesting, isn't it? Well, I think, right, that's what we're going to have to do. So if it's all right with you, because what I want to show people, really, there might be bits of this next episode that we might miss out, but you know me. I've lived most of my life on a microphone, so I don't think there will be. But I think it's quite important to maybe follow the process of what kind of things you're going to ask, and just let people have a bit of an insight. I'm all right about it if you are.
I am more than happy.
Let's do it. And then can we talk power of attorney? Because I've got no idea, you know, what it means.
And I think that's the case for a lot of people. And in many, many instances, it is actually more important than the will. So
it's what?
It's quite often more important than a will.
See, power of attorney is one of them words that you feel like you should know, but you don't ask. It's like, yeah, I know what a power of attorney is. It's someone in a big suit. It's not, is it?
No, no.
Well, I think we'll do something on power of attorney as well. It's the Mother and Daughter Breast of Friends podcast. It's Becky Measures with the gorgeous Laura from Grayson Solicitors. Back in a moment.